Good evening. Human beings are the only sentient beings that I know who think about happiness. Humans are really concerned about their happiness. In fact, I think they think about it almost all the time. And happiness is really part of what we call the American dream. And when we are taught history in school, we learn that pursuit of happiness is actually in the Declaration of Independence of this country. The Buddhist understanding of happiness is that if we want to be happy, it is necessary to be a saint. That is, we need to make our best effort to express the qualities of a saint in our everyday activities. And when we do that, when we make our best effort all the time to be a saint, we will feel satisfaction with our life. Now, this is not the usual understanding of happiness. This is not the way people see happiness. The usual belief is that happiness is dependent on possessing material things, as well as feeling emotionally gratified. And so this is where most people place their emphasis. This is how they look for happiness. This approach may work sometimes, or it may work much of the time, but it is always temporary. We obtain happiness that way only temporarily, because happiness, so-called happiness, is not sustained this way, pursuing these two ideas of material possessions and emotional gratification. True happiness is actually beyond material and emotional considerations. It is actually a spiritual feeling, a feeling of completeness and unity, where there is no sense of separation and no sense of isolation. Now, The traditional meaning of a saint is someone who has obtained an exalted position in heaven. This is decided by others, a process, a committee that reviews a person's history several years, many years, or even centuries after someone has died. A committee examines anecdotes, stories, and legends of the individual, and then they vote. And they look for two things. They look to see if the person has led an unselfish life, and if they have performed a certain number of miracles. And if they agree that these two conditions have been met, then they make a public announcement, a public acknowledgement that this person is indeed considered to be a saint. But extraordinary miracles are not true criteria for the saintly life, because that would imply that only a few special people are qualified. People who are kind of like magicians who can perform miracles. But the true saint appears in ordinary activities, and close acquaintances know who it is that lives a saintly life. Who is it that lives quietly and anonymously, expressing saintly qualities? And so there is no need for voting, and there is no need for public acknowledgement or a statue or creating a statue for someone who is living or has lived a saintly life. Our practice, our spiritual practice, is to continue the mind of a saint in our ordinary activities, which is a way of giving life to each activity. And it includes helping others, or healing a broken relationship, or healing a broken heart, or helping something to grow. A true saint does not appear only in desperate situations, performing a miracle, such as helping starving people or helping sick people. A true saint is not just a rescuer. The saintly life begins with quiet selflessness, which means to give up attachments to obtaining payoffs from our actions, and letting go of any feelings of "I deserve to be rewarded" or "I deserve to be recognized." Sometimes in life, our actions don't pay off as we expect or as we hoped for. So when we feel disappointment arising, we should immediately turn our mind to selflessness, recognizing that things change and that we can't control everything and that we will make mistakes. But when the disappointment arises because we don't receive the payoff we'd hoped for, if disappointment arises and we take it personally, we will become unhappiness. So in our practice, we emphasize our effort and our attitude rather than emphasizing our expectations. Small miracles exist in the events and relationships of our everyday life. All events and relationships, not just a select few. So when we see that our everyday life is a miracle, we can easily express selflessness. Then we ourselves will make everyday life a miracle. Then we are a saint. Then we will be happy, and everyone will be happy. Selflessness is expressed in the Buddhist precepts. The first precept says, "No killing life." Or stated another way, a more positive way, cultivating and encouraging life. So the first precept is not limited to the idea of not creating death. That is the usual understanding. But our understanding is that cultivating and encouraging life is continuous in every moment. And this is the world view of our practice. The first precept means that we should cultivate and encourage all life, not just our own, and not just that of our family. Zen practice creates in us the awareness of opportunities, of seeing ways to cultivate and encourage with people and with tasks. This attitude to life is where true happiness arises. So we cultivate this attitude through our practice, and it becomes natural. and we recognize it as the way of our true nature. And with this attitude, we cultivate and encourage our own true self. This does not mean we are transforming ourselves. There is no need to transform our fundamental inherent self. Instead, we need to set aside our confusion and our delusion and allow our true self to express itself. This is happiness. And sometimes it is known as enlightenment. Cultivating and encouraging life is equivalent to not killing life. But it does not apply only to physical life. Cultivating and encouraging means don't kill opportunities for discovery. And don't kill opportunities for giving. To kill means to drain away and waste our giving quality, as well as to deprive others of their potential with words and actions and looks. The most obvious example is when we continuously criticize small children, when we abuse them, when we don't encourage them. Then, in later life, it is hard for them to get rid of this abused feeling, and it's hard for them to be able to give. For them, life becomes one continuous need to get and to take. A very big cause of suffering in human beings is not being a saint to our children. The second precept is about not stealing, or, in a more positive way, honoring the gift not yet given. The usual idea is that stealing will mean that somebody is deprived and will suffer. And stealing also means that the community will be disrupted. So not stealing was an important commandment in primitive societies because it was absolutely necessary for harmony and the survival of these communities and tribes. A more fundamental meaning of not stealing says that if we cannot appreciate the giving quality of our world, if we emphasize taking in our life, we are stealing. So we should wait for the gifts of the world to come to us. Let them come naturally, without striving. And this means we need to cultivate patience. We don't know when the gifts of the world will come to us. But with a waiting attitude, we can create something immediate. We can create something in this moment. And this something is not so simple to define. It is intangible because it appears within our relationships. If we are not willing to wait, if we are not willing to be patient for the gifts of the world to come to us, we cannot create. If our attitude is one of getting or taking, we are killing life. And if we emphasize a taking attitude, we will lose the spirit of giving, and we will also lose the spirit of receiving. When this happens, we cannot see what the world has to offer us. The result is, we cannot be happy. So we should always be ready to let go and to not hold on to things that we treasure. That's the best way to be selfless, the best way to have an empty mind and a saintly mind, the best way to follow the precepts is to have a spiritual practice based on what we call anonymous virtue, doing things without trying to get reward or notice. Then we can encourage life without hesitation.